Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Not just any episode though, big news Wednesdays. Not with J.R. Jackson though, he's off on adventures abroad. But we have someone else returning after weeks of adventure and conquest in new lands, taking over indisputable territory and now returning with the spoils of war. Great success, I guess, in this metaphor. Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Rashad, how's it going?
My big homie, thank you, man. Pleasure to be here again, brother.
It's awesome to have you here. You know, understandably, you've been busy launching the third big daily political news show on the TYT network. And I think, you know, you don't want to jump into evaluations, but I think we can say that it's going well.
Man, I'm thankful, brother. And you know, all of the credit is due to the great production staff, people like you who support the program, and also the amazing TYT audience, man. So I could not have asked for a better launching pad, man. This has been amazing.
Well, thank you. You're being far too kind and too humble, but thank you. And people are loving the show. It's awesome to see you getting a show, so much deserved. Couldn't be more deserved. And also seeing, you know, TYT's programming start to expand. It's nice. I love it. We get new perspectives. We're covering, you know, new stuff and everything. It's awesome. And so everyone should definitely check it out. The cool thing is, it's not complicated to check out. All you got to do is just not go anywhere. You're here now because you're hearing me. Just don't go anywhere afterward because Indisputable will be available after TDR today and every day at youtube.com/indisputableTYT. And it looks like you've got Ben Dixon who's gonna be joining you today as co-host. That's an awesome pairing.
Yeah, man, he's gonna help me break down the news of the day, man. It's gonna be cool.
Awesome. And you've got Armstrong Williams on for debate and Greg Francis is gonna be your guest. How have the debates been going recently? Your little clashes with the conservatives?
Great for me. So I love the debate. So Armstrong is a returning guy. You know, he's been a black conservative talk radio guy for years, national columnist. He's in that space. So we've debated with him before. It was actually a pretty good conversation because he provides some nuance. He's not so far on the right that he is unreasonable. So I'm looking forward to talking about policing in America with him in the bullpen today.
That is awesome. Well, to give people an idea of what we're gonna be talking about today, if you'd like another debate target, another black conservative to debate, we've potentially got one coming up in just a little bit. Is gonna talk about slavery and critical race theory. That should be entertaining, if not particularly enlightening. But we got a lot of other news as well. Updates on the infrastructure bill, which they're supposedly really gonna try, the reconciliation bill. So we'll have details on that. Details on the continuing protests in Cuba and the incredibly unhelpful commentary from some US politicians about what's going on there. We've got Republicans desperately trying to debate AOC as always. And then updates on vaccines, both here in the US and abroad, what the success so far has been on vaccination. And we've even got news about the moon. You know, we got news from the earth, outside of the earth. We got all sorts of news. So definitely don't go anywhere. As we go through, if you would hit the like button, share the stream, that would be awesome. And if you want to send us messages, comments, tweets, super chats, anything like that, myself and Rashad will respond as we go. But with that said, Rashad, are you ready to jump into the news?
Let's get it, brother.
Okay, let's do it. The basic details of the reconciliation bill for infrastructure are now starting to come out, with Senate Democrats saying it's gonna happen, gonna be cool. I know you've heard a lot of bad stuff, but don't worry, it's gonna be awesome. In fact, with the bipartisan bill that we're working on together, it's $4.1 trillion. So just focus on that part and not the content, but we're gonna do both, you know? So they announced late last night that they have a deal on the reconciliation portion, which is gonna be about $3.5 trillion. And Chuck Schumer says it is going to include all of the stuff that Biden had been pushing for, the so-called human infrastructure. So that's the president's families, climate, and housing programs. So we don't know a lot of the specifics yet, but I will give you what specifics we have. So Chuck Schumer said that the plan will include a robust expansion of Medicare, including money for dental, vision, and hearing, which is something that Bernie Sanders has been pushing for some time. Now, I said I would give you the details on what's included, and I just have. That's really it at this point, unfortunately. We don't even really know much about how they're gonna pay for it, although they do say that the proposal is expected to fully offset with new revenues, among other pay-fors, which is a fun word that you only use in this context. So, Rashad, we don't know a ton about what's in it, except what it's gonna cost. And we don't know how they're gonna pay for it, except that supposedly they will.
Schumer's lying. So Schumer saying, oh yeah, it's gonna have everything that it is supposed to have in it. And then he provides no evidence to the fact that he just proclaimed. That's the political game they play, duck, dodge, deny, deflect. I don't think, one, it's enough money, number one. I do like the methodology. I actually agree with the methodology of reconciliation. They should have been doing this from day one rather than day whatever the hell it is at this point, because the more they've waited on it, the more people actually suffer. And we voted for an agenda. That's what we voted for. When you really play politics the right way, you have to get out of the atmosphere of voting for people and you only vote for the agenda. And that way you can dismiss the personality of the individual in order to get the vote that you need. That's the game that Republicans started playing years ago. That's why they could stomach the personality of a Donald Trump, because they believed he would deliver a particular agenda for their political class. Mm-hmm. And similarly on the other side, I think we should start looking at these individuals outside of the context of their glowing and charming personality and into the context of what are they actually delivering based on the agenda we voted for.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's look at what they're delivering versus what's being asked for. I mean, you know, we gave credit just a second ago to Bernie Sanders for being one of the ones who's pushing for an expansion, yes, of Medicare to actually include, you know, like things that affect your health. It's weird that you have to point out that dental and vision should be included, because most people have teeth and eyes, and there's a lot of health problems related to those. So he has thrown out wanting $6 trillion, paying for roughly half as where he would go with the reconciliation bill. So instead of the 3.5, he'd go for 6 trillion and he would only pay for half, which is paying for about as much, which is obviously, frankly, a stupid thing for Bernie Sanders to say. This dummy thinks that we can just not pay for infrastructure. No, you have to pay for infrastructure. You don't have to pay for like bombs and stuff. Those are free. You never have to pay for those. But infrastructure, come on, buddy, you gotta pay for that. That ain't killing anybody, that's saving life. What direction do you want us to go in as a country? But anyway, and to give you an idea of how you would pay for it, he says the wealthy and large corporations are going to pay their fair share of taxes so that we can protect the working families of this country. So that remains what his focus is gonna be on the revenue side. Obviously, this deal is not his preference. The price tag is not what he would prefer. But he wants to make sure that if it's gonna be paid for, and they say that it's going to, that it's gonna be paid for by the wealthy and large corporations. I think I can predict how likely you think that is to be currently how it's being paid for, but let me know what you think.
Man, come on, man. So let me tell you what's interesting about how we play the political money game. And you hit on it in your commentary just now. We always have enough money to kill people and blow things up. We have unlimited funding for that. And you have never heard anybody make the argument, it would be great to go to war with Iran, but we just don't have it in the budget. We always have enough money to kill people and blow things up. And then when it comes to massive domestic policy that actually does what it is supposed to do, what the original taxation rule of the Constitution was written for, when we go back to the purism of that, we now have to start pinching pennies. And I get what Senator Sanders is doing, 100%. He's changing the conversation in a way as well. I just hope it reaches the narrative form that it should reach. Because if we continue to allow corporate Democrats like Schumer, and listen, I'm with Schumer 50% of the time, right? But if we allow him to push the progressive agenda, we're in trouble, big time trouble. And that's why we depend on sensible voices in the progressive movement like Senator Sanders and others who are actually providing a significant remedy and substantial policy reform and changing, yeah, the conversation as it should be.
I think that's a great point. on the eve of the reconciliation bill details coming out, which I was really hoping would be out by the time we went live, but so far we're still scrambling for a few details. One of those who might be in a position to block the bipartisan bill, if this reconciliation bill doesn't have what it needs to, is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was interviewed on Democracy Now! About this strategy, about the dual path strategy. And this is what the Congresswoman had to say.
I believe that the Progressive Caucus is rather united in the fact that we will not support bipartisan legislation without a reconciliation bill and one that takes bold and large action on climate, drawing down carbon emissions, but also job creation and increasing equity and resilience in for impacted communities, particularly frontline communities. And so we've made that very clear, and that a bipartisan agreement will not pass unless we have a reconciliation bill that also passes. And so that is where we've drawn a strong line. And I believe that Speaker Pelosi, the White House, and Majority Leader Chuck Schumer have taken that threat quite seriously. They know that we fully intend on acting out on that if a reconciliation bill does not come to the floor of the House.
Okay, so look, the House is obviously fairly evenly split. It would not take many Democrats turning on the bipartisan bill to stop it in the House. She's implying that they have enough votes in the Progressive Caucus to do that. This isn't a part of the conversation that's been focused on a lot. It's more on what we're going to turn to later on, which is the centrist and right-wing Democrats blocking it potentially for other reasons. But how effective as a deterrent or as a threat do you think this might be, Rashad?
Extremely effective, and it's the right thing to do. She's playing chess, not checkers, and she understands the power of the Progressive Caucus at the moment. And I get others who make the argument, I get it, that something is better than nothing. I understand that argument. I simply disagree with the argument. In this case, you literally have an opportunity to bring your own party closer to a truly progressive policy item. That's what she's doing. And she's utilizing the leverage that she has to do so. And you only get certain moments in politics to do this. You don't get this kind of opportunity every time a bill comes up or a massive policy will be voted on. And she's taken the opportunity to do exactly what I would hope others would do if they were in a similar position, to where there's a clear definition of what's right and then a clear definition of what is a compromise. I didn't vote for people to compromise. I voted for people to serve an agenda that I believe is right. And that's what she's doing.
No, I think it's a great point. We will have to see. We still don't know quite a bit about what's in the bipartisan bill, let alone, as we've been saying, we don't know with the reconciliation bill. We're being told by Schumer it's got everything. You'll love it. You'll love the climate stuff. We'll have to find out. Will it be satisfying to your average congressperson? Will it be satisfying to those stressing the need to combat climate change like Representative Ocasio-Cortez? Remains to be seen. I sort of doubt it, but we're gonna find out. That said, that's not the only aspect of this we need to focus on. With the details forthcoming for the bipartisan with the details forthcoming for the reconciliation form of the infrastructure bill, we now have to turn from those who we've heard their opinions on it, like Chuck Schumer or Joe Biden, to those whose opinions apparently really matter these days, like Joe Manchin. So what does he think about it? Will he allow it to go through? Well, this morning he said, I heard about it this morning or late last night from my staff. Well, which is it? That's a weird thing to say. Anyway, so this morning is now. Did you hear about it now? Or anyway, he says, so we're anxious to basically review it. They worked hard on it. We want to see it. Also, I've been very clear that I want to see the pay fors and make sure that whatever we do is globally competitive. And I already feel a little bit queasy. He said he wants to know if specifically the tax adjustments are going to be globally competitive. So globally competitive is sort of designed to make it seem as if he's not saying a specific thing. Like, what does that mean? I mean, he could be talking about literally anything. I feel though, Rashad, that only means, are you raising corporate taxes? Because that's the only time they ever talk about global competition, is our tax rate comparable to other states? So We're gonna have more from him in just a minute, but it already sounds like he's saying you're not raising the corporate tax rate to pay for this.
The man is already bought and paid for. Okay, that has been proven. AOC spoke about that. And then we got the records that shows exactly where his loyalty lies. So anytime he says things like this, to me, it's a wink and a nod to the corporations that have purchased him fully and wholly. Any bill that includes Joe Manchin is already a bipartisan bill. Just understand that. He's a Republican in de facto, and he's a Democrat in name only.
Yeah, 100%. And again, I would like to throw out there, as some have been trying to do, what makes a bill bipartisan, and that's assuming that you value bipartisanship as a general principle. Do conservatives and or Democrats and Republicans out there in the country support it? But that's never what they actually mean by it. Like, a bill could have 70% Republican voter support. That doesn't make it bipartisan if all the representatives are being. So that's a weird way that we operate as a country. But anyway, he goes on to say, I'm open to looking at everything they provide, okay? They're going to have to provide all the information that's going to be needed. They worked hard, they should have a proposal. Okay, that's all basically nonsense. Sure, you'll look at it. The American people, and this is where it gets even darker. We have a debt of 28.5 trillion right now. We have indications of inflation spiking. What's going to happen to the generation coming after us if we don't have some kind of controls or some basically brakes on different things? So I'm looking at everything in a holistic way. Well, holistically, he's a brake on different things. That's all he is. He's there to stop the Democrats from getting anything done. But what does he support potentially? Well, asked if he supports expanding Medicare to cover vision, hearing, and dental care, he responded, dental is a very important part of a person's health. So even in that, I guess your eyes and your ears can go kick rocks. He cares about your teeth, maybe, but that's about it out of those three. And he proposed lifting the cap on income subject to Social Security taxes, but asked if he supports a wealth surcharge tax, he says, I'm going to evaluate everything they put forward, sort of implying that some sort of wealth tax might be a possibility. Look, I'd love to be surprised. I don't really believe that's a thing that he's coming to the table with an open mind on.
Yeah, his code is quite simple to decode. Anytime he doesn't give you a direct answer, that means he gave you a direct answer. His direct answer is, no, I'm not going to support that, right? Here's the issue with money and politics, and the reason why we have these challenges that other nations do not have. We allowed for unlimited money inside of our political arena. Well, what does that mean? That means that you're no longer making decisions based on a policy platform, you're making decisions based on a profit platform. And not only is he setting himself up to have a windfall of money so that he can fight challengers, but he's also setting himself up for a great retirement plan. There's no telling what this guy would do after he leaves the US Senate, but he definitely has a cushy landing spot with a lot of these same corporations that support him now.
100%. Yeah. No, he likes the money that he's getting in donations now, but that's not even personal money for him. That can influence him a little bit. The money he's gonna get someday.
That's
and
right.
has in the past, because he's already served on boards and things like that. Okay, apparently I said a word I can't say. Really? Man, they don't let you say anything these days anyway.
One word.
I can't say it. That's the problem. No, he tried to get me in trouble right there. The doctor tried.
We would have both got in trouble. I would have repeated it after you, brother. Don't
That's
worry.
True.
We would have both
got it. Really? It is 2021.
What I don't even know we? What word it
babies?
Is. So obviously, I would have said it too, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, let's see if chat can figure it out what word it was. Anyway. Yeah, thank you. No, I know what word it is. Anyway. Okay. Well, we're gonna see if more news about what's in the bill is actually gonna come out. Insomnia Noir got it, and we'll have that for you if it comes. But we do have to take our first break, so stick with us after this. Update on the Cuba protests: the Miami mayor is basically the worst, and Lauren Boebert is desperate for a debate with AOC. We'll break down whether that would be a good strategy after this. Okay, we're back with more news, and I am going to cut it with the potty mouth before this show gets pulled, okay? Rashad, you ready for some more news?
Let's get it.
Okay, we got a little bit of international news to jump into. The aftermath of the Cuba freedom protests that we talked about earlier have been incredibly rough, both in terms of some life lost as well as people who've been disappeared, which is very much not the reaction you want to see when the fundamental grievance against the government is that they are not allowing people their freedom. So let's give you a few details on this. One person has apparently died during these demonstrations. You have clashes between protesters and police, which have resulted not just in the death, but also an unspecified number of people arrested, some injured, including some officers. The statement from the government says that demonstrators have vandalized houses, setting fires and damaging power lines. It also alleged they attacked police and civilians with knives, stones, and other objects. Again, that information is coming from the government, so it is possible that some elements of it are true. I certainly wouldn't just take their word on it, though. And when you point out that people are being disappeared, more than 100 of them, and the reaction from the protesters is that they have some stones, that's painting an image, but perhaps not the image that you think you are when you're attempting to control the narrative as a part of the government. But the more than 140 who've been detained or disappeared, hopefully they will be identified. Amnesty International is looking into it. But obviously this is not a time when there should be any quarter given on the government deciding when and if you get to find out where your relatives or friends might have been taken to during a protest. And we will have more details, but Dr. Rashad, what do you think about this?
Well, let me first say very clearly, I stand with the people of Cuba. And I know many conservatives, they have taken this opportunity to make political points rather than humanistic points. And the political point that they have been trying to land is the formation of government in Cuba and blaming the kind of government Cuba has as to the woes and the social ills of the Cuban people. Now, let's be very clear. We live in America in a very hyper political reality. So a lot of things are interpreted through this hyper political lens. The reason why Cuba is going through what they're going through is because of direct mismanagement of resources, a lack of resources, mishandling of COVID, and you have systemic governmental corruption. Policing is out of control as well there. So you have all of these elements happening at the same time. The people are tired of it and they're speaking out. This has nothing to do with the formation of government. You have mismanagement happening in governments all across the globe. It's not just because of the kind of government they have. These are individual bad actors, and they would be individual bad actors regardless of what kind of government was in place. And I think all of us should take an opportunity to look at this from an individual or human perspective rather than a political perspective. And that is the sad narrative that's happening in conservative circles right now.
Yeah, and my fear is that sort of what you're pointing out, the attempt to make it exclusively about this one thing is going to lead to probably a disproportionate amount of coverage of what's going on there from right wingers who want to use it to demonstrate that fake point. And then from other forms of media, I mean, what are you gonna get? Maybe a little bit of initial coverage because there's awesome protest footage or whatever, but then what comes after that? I mean, is CNN or MSNBC going to like engage in a prolonged effort to get Biden to normalize relations with Cuba? Maybe. If they do, I wouldn't know because I don't watch them, but I'm just presuming to say that I don't think that that's what's happening. Maybe Chris Hayes is saying something that is possible, but this is about bad actors and it's also about fake actors. So, you know, Dr. Rashad, you said, you know, you stand with the Cuban people and you mean it. You want them to be free, to be healthy, to be vaccinated. Biden said much the same thing, that he stands with them, and he's pretty much just standing though. And the thing is, he's a president. He can do more than stand. He could normalize relationships. He could take down the more than 200 sort of new regulations and basically walls between our two countries that were set up by Donald Trump. And that was bad when Trump did it, but it becomes more than just a Trump thing if Biden keeps them.
That's right.
So if the issues that the people in Cuba are talking about are, look, there's plenty that's specific to members of their government and members of their police. That's true. But if there's high prices and if there's food shortages and if there's shortages of vaccines and other medicines, kind of feel like a blockade might be related to that. And so you're standing with the Cuban people is great. I love to see people stand. But you're the president. You could do way more. We can expect way more. And hopefully that's being reflected in media coverage of this.
Yeah, and think about the mess we really made, man. President Obama, even though I disagree with him on some of his international policy, President Obama had the right idea. He said, listen, the embargo doesn't work. We actually put it in place so that we could get a conclusion out of Cuba, and it never happened. So it didn't work. It's not going to work. We need to revisit that policy. He does so. He makes some changes. Trump gets in. He unravels all of that and makes it even worse. He created, under his administration, significant destabilizing factors through policy and our international relationship with Cuba. And now you're seeing the result of that. But you're right, John. At some point, this is Biden's problem and no longer Trump's problem. And that point is now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That is true. And also, if this stuff bothered you under Trump, presumably it can still bother you. That'd be great. A little bit of ideological consistency. We're always fans of that. Anyway, let's move on to another aspect of this. As the situation in Cuba continues, we've been looking to see what US politicians are going to say about this. We're obviously worried about what form their both statements as well as interventions could come in. I talked about this morning about the fact that the head of the DHS has said that any Cuban refugees trying to make it into the US will be turned away. So that standing with the Cuban people doesn't extend as far as the DHS, at least. But now we're getting statements from other politicians, including the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, who was brought onto Fox News and had this to say about the situation.
President Clinton in Kosovo intervening in a humanitarian issue with airstrikes. So there have been many, many opportunities in the history.
Are you suggesting airstrikes in Cuba?
What I'm suggesting is that that option is one that has to be explored and cannot be just simply discarded as an option that is not on the table. And there's a variety of ways the military can do it, but that's something that needs to be discussed and needs to be looked at as a potential option in addition to a variety of other options that can be discussed.
Yeah.
What? How did we get from there's protest to, well, we might have to do some airstrikes? I mean, hey, look, I want to be fair. There's a variety of forms that our airstrikes could come in. I don't think that there are. I think that there's the airstrike variety. Exactly how would that help in any way right now? What would be the military objective? What would be the humanitarian objective of airstrikes against Cuba because of protests happening? You could put a whole bunch of potential responses on a dartboard and hit something more productive at random than the mayor of a major US city near to Cuba saying, we need to be considering killing more Cubans. Rashad, what do you think?
Yeah, he's disgraceful. Think about the irony of that. You're saying in order to stabilize Cuba, you must create more instability through blowing it up. That's how you're going to stabilize Cuba. Cuba has a resource issue, and yes, they have a mismanagement issue. But you can't solve that by killing folks or dropping bombs. It doesn't even fit the solution matrix that's on the table for a domestic crisis like Cuba is having. So I'm not sure exactly what his motive really is. But damn, that's so in left field that even John Bolton wouldn't think of something like that. He hasn't met a brown country. He doesn't want a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah, and even the Fox host was like, wait, are you suggesting airstrike? Like, Fox was taken aback by your warmongering. And look, I guess to some extent, to be fair, he says as well as other responses, but you'll know he doesn't come up with any specific ones. The only specific response he can think of is airstrikes. Yeah. And then, I don't know, maybe there's something else. I'll put my best people on it. They'll come up with something.
He said that for TV, John. He said that, maybe other things because he was on television. That's the only reason why he put that additional caveat on there.
Yeah, it is so sick. Like, it is so easy to conceive of ways that you could help these people that would be far easier, far cheaper, far less likely to kill a bunch of people. And this is what they come up with, which, look, they want a military option. He implied there's other forms that it could come in. So I want to be helpful. So what I think we should do is we can get the mayor of Miami. We can get some of these warmongering conservatives who want to see bloodshed in Cuba. And we take a bunch of them and we drop them off in a bay, like a bay of pigs, let's say. And we get like two dozen of them. and they can try to help out. It probably won't go very well, but this is what they want, okay? No, it's absolute madness. Like, I can't imagine that being what you think your addition to the discourse should be. Not enough people are talking about killing people in Cuba. Let me go on Fox News to make the case.
Recently in a Twitter exchange, Socialist Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez says that Republicans like me are dismantling America's safety nets. No, honey, the only one who's threatening to dismantle America's safety net is you with your $93 trillion Green New Deal. There are people who actually need this, and because of the inflation you're going to cause, they won't be able to have that. Our country is not great because of our welfare system. It's not great because of stimulus checks or government handouts. It is our freedom that makes America the greatest country in the world.
Okay, so this is a couple of things at the same time. I mean, most obviously this is an attempt by Lauren Boebert to elevate herself by putting her in a conversation with serious politicians like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Lauren Boebert. There's an O there. I don't know why none of them can say that. There is also potentially a conversation to be had about government assistance programs, which she is now in like a multi-week campaign against. But so far, this is about raising her profile. She tweeted along with this video, "The socialists are out to get me. And their supreme leader is now leading the charge." Okay, she's a congresswoman like you. She's not the supreme leader of some socialist army or something like that. But anyway, we're gonna get to where the right wants to take this thing. And I do want to talk a little bit about her approach to government assistance programs. But Doctor, what do you think about Lauren Boebert there?
She's clout chasing, and really, it's a compliment to AOC. Because when you're clout chasing and trying to get shine off of somebody else, you have to go after the person that has clout. You have to go after the person that got shine. And that's all she's trying to do. It's quite obvious. She's making herself the victim. And it's amazing to me how typically in these narratives of individuals who will proclaim that this is the freest country in the world, that there is no systemic bias or racism in America, that there is no victimhood mentality in America, they always play the damn victim in all of their social media posts.
Yeah, 100%. At least she's showing an ability to adapt. She was able to make it through that still fairly cringeworthy video without using terms like Fauci ouchie as some sort of intellectual point or whatever. But it still wasn't great. I have to, at this point, I know that she's sort of competing with Marjorie Greene to be the, as they point out on SNL, the it girl on the right, like the clown, not like the cool girl, the it girl. Marjorie Greene is just sort of dull and dim, whereas Lauren Boebert like tries to perform, and it's not great. But they are desperate for this to escalate. So let's go to Sean Hannity trying to give her a bit of an assist.
Congresswoman, I'd like to see that debate. So if I offered airtime, I'll stay out of it completely. I'll give a half hour airtime, just you and Congress. I'll even give an hour. You versus Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, no moderator. I'll just sit there and say, all right, guys, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. Introduce you and then shut up. Or throw out a topic,
the economy,
throw out a topic. What's that?
Yes. Well,
okay. So again, this comes down to the debate thing. What would be, I don't know, like I obviously have made clear that I don't think it would be productive. I think it would largely be a waste of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's time. That said, I know a lot of people would love to see her run circles around Lauren Boebert. I don't know, Rashad, what do you think? Is this something that she should consider?
Hell yeah, AOC will eat that ass up. And I hope, can I say that? Okay.
I think you're okay.
Okay.
The word anyway, if not the phrasing.
All right. I would think it would be a remarkable display of wit, progressive policy. Because remember, These individuals on the right, especially folks like her, they never really argue policy, they argue talking points. And many of them adopt their talking points from people like Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson. So I would love to see an actual policy debate, and I would love to see it with someone that actually represents a progressive policy agenda. I know we may say, oh, you know, that's beneath her, but you know, this is a member of Congress too. So not really.
That's true.
So let's make something happen. I would be down for it personally.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I thought that we would have a slightly different position on that. And you are right. She's still a congresswoman. It kills me.
I know.
Like, she.
I know.
How are you not a congressperson, but she's a congressperson? Seriously, I'm not going to compare myself. Obviously, that would be ridiculous. But okay, so really fast, I'm probably wasting my time. There's no substance to her, really. There's no substance to what Sean Hannity is saying. Sean Hannity is just clout chasing like Lauren Boebert is. Right. I'll even give an hour. Dude, don't pretend like it's right. You giving something. You're desperate to have AOC on your show for an hour. We all are. But anyway, here's the thing. They all so want to be AOC. Like, they can't stop thinking about how bad Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene. And honestly, it's not even just them. Matt Gaetz wants to be AOC, and Madison Cawthorn desperately wants to be AOC. And all of them are fundamentally missing the entire point. They have as shallow a view of why AOC is a thing that you know, or why she matters, as a lot of, honestly, like the centrist mainstream media. They all say, oh, she's popular on Twitter. That's what it is. She's young and she gets social media. No, that is, she is. She's good at that stuff. But lots of people are clever. That's not what it's about. AOC has ideas.
Right.
AOC accurately diagnoses issues and communicates them expertly,
yes.
Comes up with actual plans and pushes for them. All of that is absent from all of these wannabe AOCs, the pretenders. It's also absent from a lot of the mainstream media's evaluation of why people like AOC, and we use AOC as like shorthand, but it's also obviously Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and a number of other people that they've been targeting.
Right.
Why won't Marjorie Greene or Lauren Boebert come up with a policy, something? They say that they represent conservatives who've been left behind, ignored by the coastal elites. Well, then don't stop ignoring them. Come up with something. They have problems. Did you see the opioid overdose numbers that just came out in the last day? Come up with a plan. They don't have health insurance. They have no prospects for home ownership, for education. They're economically ruined. A lot of them are racist and all that too, and that's how you're trying to appeal to them. But they also do have economic problems. Why, Rashad, won't any of these wannabe AOCs come up with an actual plan?
Because any Republican who has a real policy agenda ends up like Jeb Bush. Okay, that's why. A Republican today who has an agenda, a policy focused agenda, is not popular in the new current Trump party. And here's why. Here's the interesting reality that has already happened. It's not happening, it has already happened. The movement of the new Republican right is more rooted in white supremacy than American policy. And when you're rooted in white supremacy as your foundational movement, then everything you say must be either a direct sentiment or coded language to uplift that white supremacist agenda. And that is how you become popularized within the political narrative. And so if you stop saying that and start talking policy, you're talking a language that the white supremacists will not understand, or they may misinterpret.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, if you're a conservative and you're watching this and you think that what Rashad just said there was unfair, when we often say that your appeal to your base is based on xenophobia, racism, transphobia, all of that, and you think that's wrong, you need to understand, we're just watching what you do.
Right.
We see what you talk about and we notice what you don't. And not just the politicians, but the media as well. If you've been watching Fox News this year, I get an idea of what you're focusing on. It ain't right-wing populism. I almost said the word again. It is the genitals of Mr. Potato Head. It is Dr. Seuss. It is young trans athletes. Mm-hmm. It's the big lie. And it's anti-vax fears. It's trying to turn them against the government, even if it kills them along the way. You are acting as if there is no hope to appeal to these people based on economic concerns, actual policy. That's not us. That's just us watching you. It's on you if you want to change that. But your politicians clearly don't. And your media figures have made clear that they don't see any path when it comes to that. And it's not just Fox News, by the way. You look at these chuckleheads on YouTube, the Ben Shapiros and the wannabe Ben Shapiros or whatever. They never, ever, ever talk about anything that's really happening. You would have no idea what country you're in, let alone the problems it's facing, if you were just watch these forms of media. So again, I'm just responding to what you guys talk about. You're the ones who clearly have the problem. Anyway, with that, we have a bigger Fox problem, which is going to be coming up on the other side of this break. It just makes me so mad, but we'll get to that in just a moment. We do have to take a break though, so let's take a look at what's going on out there in the audience. Okay, I'm gonna need everybody to hold on your butts. This next one is gonna be something.
Yeah, because they're very invested in this whole idea that the nation was founded on the idea of systemic racism, that it's built into every single institution in America, even in the military. Folks are worried that this is something that they need to address within the military. And we just did a story about how the Navy is underprepared right now, but they're spending a heck of a lot of time on this. What do you think about that?
It's absolutely absurd because nobody really wants to get the real history of it. America was not founded on racism. Don't get me wrong, yeah, there was slavery going on, but slavery itself was not initially a racist thing. It never was about race initially. So to sit there and take it like America was founded on racism is a complete lie. Yeah, there was slavery going on, but slavery was going on in all the world. It never was a race thing. So why are we making it a race thing now?
Ty Smith, thank you for being here. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, so that is Ty Smith, who is a conservative YouTuber, apparently the brother of Candace Owens, I hadn't known that, who is presented on Fox as Illinois father. So I believe he went viral in a video where he went to a town hall meeting to talk about critical race theory, and he has been presented as just a concerned parent when he is very much a clout chasing, grifting conservative YouTuber, but they always pretend that. They can't get actual genuine parents. So they just take people from media and think tanks and present them as regular people. But Rashad, he made some fairly strong, confident historical statements there about the nature of slavery. I have a problem with it. What do you think?
I think he needs to sign up and become a student in my classroom. So let's first talk about the formation of the country, which is different from American slavery. 1776, foundation of the country. 1787, you have your constitutional ratification. You already had slavery in America. Now think about this, if slavery was not based on a racial context, why is it that within the context of the Constitution, only black Africans were considered 3/5 of a person? Those who were enslaved were only from the African continent. They did not enslave white women. They did not enslave white men. They only enslave black men from a particular continent. That is the root definition of racism. Racism is discrimination and an antithetical approach to those of a particular demographic only. That's your definition of racism. How in the hell is that not racism when it specifically targets one demographic, period? But I 100%. Listen, man, I have a ton I could drop on that, and I hope this guy joins the bullpen. We've already reached out to him on Indisputable to come and debate me on this fact. Yeah.
Okay. Whew, that's gonna be something. Yeah. The issue, I mean, we'll see. I hope that you can get through to him, but my fear is that based on him being a conservative YouTuber, based on his show being called Cancel This, which lets you know quite a bit about the worldview and all that.
Yeah.
Is that I think, and I don't wanna say anything too confidently, I don't know the person, I think he may not be being totally honest. I think he might be saying the things that he thinks he needs to say to get an audience, not things that he actually believes. I don't know, but I've heard of people on YouTube doing this before. So that's my fear. Obviously, it's ahistorical nonsense. I know that. And he makes the point that other places have had slavery. And this is something that I've of course heard people say. People say, hey, Italy had slavery. So I will respond to that as an Italian. Italy also having slavery doesn't make America good. It makes Italy bad, actually. That's how that works. Right. They're both bad for their slavery. Now, they're not the same in some ways. I would say that there are certainly forms where American slavery was far more insidious in the systemic breaking up of families, mass genocidal rape and violence and all that. But you don't get out of slavery free because Italy did it or whatever, or some other country did. That's not how it works. And to add a little bit more history, so I don't know the history as well as Rashad, but I do have some sources. So if it's not a racial thing, one person who needs to take your class is Confederate Vice President Alexander Stevens, who had this to say: "Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite idea. Its foundations are laid, its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man. That slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world based upon this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth. With us, all of the white race, however high or low, rich or poor, are equal in the eye of the law. Not so with the Negro. Subordination is his place. He, by nature or by the curse against Canaan, is fitted for that condition which he occupies in our system." And it goes on and on and on, comparing black slaves to the mortar and bricks a great architect might use to build something. It's terrible, but it is also reflective of how not just random white people thought about slavery, but how political elites thought about slavery. It was very much a racial thing from the very beginning.
Yeah, and also, once again, a Christian evangelical thing, because much of what's known as systemic racism is born out of an idea that black people through scripture were cursed individuals. And you can find writings of what we would consider to be enlightened political figures who believed that black people by nature and biblical design and Christian dogma were somehow subordinate to white males. Now that is the birthplace of the superiority complex we deal with in the United States of America. And it is ingrained into Christian thought and Christian ideology.
Yeah, it's just, I hate it. And you know what might help to help teach the accurate history of slavery is a little bit of that critical race theory that they're trying to ban that doesn't actually get taught. But if it did, anyway, so now that I know that you in theory might be debating Ty Smith, I want you to be prepared because he has a challenge that no leftist has been able to make good on. So we're gonna give him a chance to talk about this to help prepare you for your debate, Doctor.
What's the challenge?
To where, you know, you just can't tell me that the sky is blue and I'm just gonna believe you. I go out and see if it's actually real. And so throughout my life, I was told this same type of ideology, and everywhere that I went and I looked for it, it was not there. Now people are trying to debate that and say, yes, it is, because no, to this day, ever since the video went viral, no one has been able to point to an institution, show me any type of data, any type of statistics where it exists, where there's this systemic or institutionalized racism thing that's actually there to only benefit white people and then to do the opposite to blacks. Nobody has been able to point me in. I've had professors with their PhDs that call me and they've hung up on me.
It's never happened, Rashad. Well,
let me do
it. Never happened. You can be the first.
Let me provide him just one institution where there's systemic racism that's meant to benefit one racial group, the church and white Jesus.
Yeah.
How do you get to a white blue-eyed Jesus out of Africa in Egypt? How do you do that? How do you describe the Messiah of a whole religion adversarial to what the Bible says he looked like in the book of Revelations? So if you want to look to one particular institution that has supported white supremacy before even the foundations of the United States of America, look no further than the white Jesus inside of your church.
Yeah, that is a great opening shot. I am assuming you can provide even more examples. Hopefully that'll be coming up on a future episode of Indisputable. So we'll be looking forward to that. And you can watch Indisputable right after this program, youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. But for now, we are out of time for our first hour. So to our linear audience, thank you so much for watching. Apologies for the naughty language. I'll try not to do that. We do have more coming for Twitch and YouTube though after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.